up, and as a leader of CR, to have you take this issue by the horns, as the saying goes, is a testament to your leadership and what you can do to help navigate a better America. So thank you for that. But as far as my situation, what compelled me to write the post was, as a past president of Bay East Association of Realtors, a leader in my community, an activist in my community, it's back to what I said to you, leaders have to say something. And I felt as if this murder took place, we all saw it. And as a leader, I said to myself, well, am I gonna just sit back and go, oh, that's bad, I hate to see that, or am I going to say something? And with the platform of social media, I thought, well, not only can I say something, I can put it out there and see who will read it, hear it, experience it, call me, talk to me. And I'm happy to say I had several calls from yourself, obviously, and some of my white friends had called and said, hey, I just didn't realize it was that different. So it just led me to say something. And so I put it in writing. I thought about, should I post it or should I not? But it eventually decided I should post it. And it has led to an avenue for me to have a voice to bring to the forefront that there are two Americas out there.
Tim, we had an opportunity to have you come talk to our staff. And as I said, it was an incredible moment of learning for many of us. It was confirmation for many of the people on the staff. And for those who live in the two Americas, which is a good portion of the CAR staff, it allowed them also to find their voice. But one of the things that, you know, we do here is the notion that there's all lives matter, et cetera, et cetera. And perhaps a little bit of a lack of an understanding of equality versus equity. Can you talk a little bit about the difference between Black Lives Matter and All Lives Matter or Blue Lives Matter, and talk about this as you did to us on staff when you spoke?
Yeah, and it was funny about that. I recently had an incident where I was able to explain that to someone live. And again, you just never know how people think. Not everybody knows, but I love to play golf. I'm a golfer. And I mark my golf ball. For non-golfers, you mark your golf ball so you can know which one is yours. So when you play and you hit your ball, you know what your ball is. So I mark my golf ball BLM, which is Black Lives Matter. And so a friend of mine and I were out playing golf. We were paired with two white guys. And we hit our balls. And one of the guys in the other group saw my ball and said, hey, is this yours over here? Is it BLM on it? And so he stopped and asked me, what does that mean? I said, well, it means Black Lives Matters. And he said to me, well, don't all lives matter? And so I was able to give him the example that I'm getting ready to share with you and the staff. The difference is Black Lives Matter is a crisis and All Lives Matter is equity. There is a crisis in the Black community where police officers are killing unarmed Black people at a much higher rate than our white counterparts. So that is a crisis. All lives matter mean we care about everybody. So the example I gave was, imagine you're home, you're having dinner, and all of a sudden a kitchen fire breaks out. And you call the fire department, they come rushing out, and they start spraying all the homes on your block. And you look at them, you ask, what are you guys doing? And they say to you, well, all homes matter. Yeah, well, all homes are not on fire. My house is. So when we say Black Lives Matter, we're referring to there's a crisis in the Black community that we need our white counterparts to recognize and help us address this crisis. Similar, if it was a fire, you want to put your fire out and then can be concerned with smoke and water damage for other homes, but we want to address the crisis. And so when I explained that to the guy, he was kind of bright-eyed and couldn't quite believe I had such a good example for him, but I was happy to say he got it. He apologized. He said, you know what? I never thought of it being that way. he and his friend kind of, you know, were both excited to hear a clear explanation as opposed to Black Lives Matter is being portrayed as I've even heard it before as a racist group out to do bad things and damage property and what have you. And it's so far from the truth. But if you don't know that, if you haven't had a chance to really understand the difference, you can walk away with just like those guys had the assumption that Black Lives Matter was something bad. So I shared an example with you all at the staff, not that particular golf ball example, but I did make it clear that it is a crisis versus equity. And I would encourage anyone that is faced with a question like that to use an example like that to make sure the person they're explaining to can understand it.
What I thought also was one of the most memorable parts of that conversation was when you talked about actionable steps that the non-Black community can take to start to deal with the incredible situations that we've seen over the past few months and years.
Yeah, and you know what?
What do you recommend?
Well, that's a great question. And I want to take a moment and just make sure I let everyone know. When I did the presentation with you all, I did have a resource guide of 75 things white people can do to fight racial justice. And I shared that with the staff. But I want to point out to everyone that Joel was racist enough and grabbing things by the horn to say, not only are we going to recognize this, but we're going to do something about it. So everyone on staff was granted a day off with pay to find a way to go out and get involved and fight for social justice, racial justice, what have you. So that is more than just saying, hey, that's bad. Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. What a terrible thing that happened to George Floyd. No, you have to do something. You know, when I would speak at other occasions, I would ask people, I would often say, raise your hand if you're not a racist. Well, everybody's hand can go up because nobody would like to admit that they're a racist. But if I was to turn around and ask you, raise your hand if you're anti-racist, and you can tell me something you've done to fight racism, not as many hands go up because not as many people are doing something to make a change, see something, say something, do something. Most people look at it and go, oh my God, I can't believe that's happening in 2021. Well, unless you're going to do something, it will continue to happen. So to my point, you gave everyone a day off in pay. You also donated $50,000 to the Legal Defense Fund, which is the NAACP, to make sure we as an association do something and not just say, oh, that's bad. Oh, I can't believe that. So for those of you that can clap, you want to give him a hands up, attaboy, whatever, because it all starts with leadership. And it's up to leaders to do something and say something. So Joe, again, I want to make sure everyone know that was another takeaway from our meeting that we had with you and the staff. So I applaud you for that. But that's the thing going forward. We have to make sure people are anti-racist and doing something to fight racism and not just say, oh, wow, that's bad. I can't believe that.
Tim, you know, there's a couple of things that in that 75 things people can do, and I can talk a little bit about, you know, some of the things CAR has done as well before we get to our panel and a really moving video. You know, beyond the things you mentioned, CAR is committed to moving forward. And that commitment really goes back a number of years, but one of the key things is to sustain that commitment at a high level throughout, right, you know, throughout all periods of time, not just need an event to spur us to greater action how do you do that? How do you have the fortitude to continue at that high level of engagement? And what can you tell us that would really, you know, mark that these actions are serious and meaningful?
The biggest thing is what we have to do is make sure we stay top of mind with conversation. so often, you know, with the George Floyd murder and the protests and all, everybody is top of mind right now. And it's all, I hate to say fashionable, but it's kind of the buzzword. The challenge is going to be a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now. Will we still have the same passion for equality and equity that we are seeking now? We just can't do it now because it's a hot topic. We have to keep going. So that's going to be keeping the conversation going. And more importantly, making change with laws and rules and regulations is where we come in as directors. We have to get a seat at the table with lenders, with home builders, with healthcare, all those places of disparity where we see African-American and people of color being treated far less. We have to continue to say something. I mean, even here it is with COVID-19, a pandemic, and statistics show that people of color are dying at a higher rate because of healthcare issues, previous health issues from bad diets, because the neighborhoods they were put in were not surrounded by grocery stores that carried the proper nutritional food. So this is so, so deep. So it just can't be, you know, CAR is having a conversation with Black realtors on the February 8th. This has to be an ongoing, nonstop voice beacon to be heard and spoken up about. And so the answer to your question is, we just can't do today or tomorrow. We have to continue to have a voice going on down the road.
Yeah. Thank you very much for that, Tim. And again, from the CAR standpoint, or at least from my personal standpoint representing CAR, we need to be measured. We need to be measured on those actions that you described. We need to be measured on having a very robust legislative initiative package, which we do this year, one of the most aggressive ever, to start to address these issues. And obviously, when all is said and done, we need to be measured on narrowing the housing gap. It's about a 30% gap between white homeownership rates and Black homeownership rate in California. If we really are sustained in this effort, that gap has to come down, and we have to make every effort to do that. And again, I want to thank you for being an inspiration to me and to all of us on staff. I want you to know that you have the support of CAR and my personal support in your ongoing endeavors. And I look forward to the rest of this program, and thanks for letting me be a part of it. So I'll turn it over to you.
You're so welcome. Thank you again for being here. I noticed there's quite a bit going on in the chat room. I'm gonna just take a pause and see if there's some questions we should answer before I move into the panel discussion and introduce our panel. Novelette, are
yes.
you?
Yes.
Okay, you wanna, could we take a moment to see if anyone has any questions for us? Or the two must to deal with, let's keep moving.
This is Crystal DaCosta. Can everyone hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, Crystal.
Okay, perfect. Yes, we do have, several people have asked, including Rocky Rockhill, who I'm looking at right now in the Q&A section. Put your questions, if you do not see the Q&A, button, put them in the chat and we will get to them. We're going to have another break for questions when the panel comes on, but specifically regarding what was just discussed, where can we get the report about 75 things we can do?
I will pass that on to you, Crystal. How about that?
Okay.
And okay. Or Lisette, whomever. I do have it. It is a handout that I gave, so it's not something I have to go get. I can retrieve it from my files and forward it to you, whomever. We can determine who would be the best person to get it. And I know we keep track of who logs in, so we can make sure we get it out to them as a follow-up.
Yes, you can send it to me. We will make sure. And if there's a link, we'll put it in the chat if you know that right offhand. Before this event ends, we put it in the chat. Otherwise, I'll make sure that everyone has access to it.
I am not that savvy to go find it.
No worries. I learn every time I jump on this thing. I learn something new.
Okay.
Just lots of, I'm reading through the comments, lots of accolades for Joel taking up the mantle, for you, Tim, getting this ball rolling on this very important subject. Let me continue to go down, lots of activity in the chat.
Okay.
Actually, we do have, we have someone who did post the link to 75 things white people can do for racial justice.
There you go.
So it is in the chat if everyone wants to look at it, and make sure you save the chat at the end. Lots of great jobs. Jobs well done. I think I'm at the end. How, I have a question from Ken.
Okay.
How can we keep the energy and passion of Black Lives Matter and the fight for racial justice?
That's a great question, Ken. One thing I want to point out too, I'm not sure if you're all aware that Black Lives Matter is being considered for a Nobel Peace Prize for the work that they were doing for equality. So make sure you pay attention to that, because even if they don't win, just to be recognized as a group that is in the forefront of change is something we should all be proud of. Because at the end of the day, a diverse community is a healthy community. But to answer your question, it's gonna be up to us. You know, the old saying, it all starts with the person in the mirror. We're gonna have to be the ones. And that's my Black realtors, my white realtors, my brown, everybody that's out there, we have to all recognize that we have to stay in front of this, and more important, like I said earlier, see something, say something. Be anti-racist. Don't just say I'm not a racist. And as long as everyone will focus on being anti-racist, you will find that things will change, versus saying, oh, I can't believe that's happening in 2021. And then get in your car and drive off and look for your next listing. That's where it has to be a change. Even myself, I might confess, I've seen this all my life. There are certain times that I've sparked more than others. This particular case with George Floyd sparked me more, but I have been in case and seen situations where, man, that's wrong. And went and got my burger and fries and just thought about it, how bad it was, but didn't do anything. So the key to go forward is for all of us to do something.
Great answer. I have another question.
Okay.
From Paula, Paula Swain, is there a resource if an association or a brokerage would like to have a conversation such as this one?
What do you mean, is there a
resource? Is there a resource for them?
I'm not sure if I understand that question. If there's a pool of people that go out, I'm not sure if I understand. Joe, you want to touch on that?
I'm not sure if we can unmute Paula, but I'm going to take a liberty here and say perhaps some kind of guide or resource, if it's in the sense of a workbook or something like that.
Well, so the resource...
And again, I'm taking liberty.
Right. The resource guide I'm going to put out, well, that's it. I have another resource guide. Let me back up. The one that was the link was 75 Things White People Can Do. I also have a separate resource guide with books for kids as young as 5 years old, how to teach your five-year-old about race, up to adult, where you can look at your local associations, you can look at your local jurisdictions, state and federal. So I have a resource that I'll make sure I get to you all that I think is what she's asking, but I'm not sure.
No, that's great. I see in the chat also, Tani actually has a question from Rick Schumacher. Okay. Tani, would you like to ask that on his behalf? Tani, if we can unmute.
Yes, I'm trying to find it. Hold on.
There you go.
We hear you.
I know. I just can't find the question. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, let me see if I could just find him. Rick.
And while you're doing that, I have another question.
Okay.
This is from Elizabeth Dole.
Okay.
Doyle, excuse me. How, when, and who would be the best person to incorporate talks like this into our local district meetings?
That would be, in my opinion, a local question for your association. Here at Bay East, I'm a member of Bay East Association of Realtors. We just formed a task force to address the subject, and now we're going to form a committee. As a result of the task force said we need a committee. So now we're going to have a committee to go on and carry this on with ongoing meetings. So as an example, that could be something you can take to your association and say, hey, we should develop a diversity, equity, and inclusion committee. And then that committee can put together activities and events and what have you to make sure the topic stays top of mind with your association. Again, at Bay East, that's what we're doing. Needless to say, I'm on the committee to help carry the word further. So I would say turn to your local association to have them entertain the idea of ongoing conversation.
If I can jump in on this one as well. Yes. At this director's meeting, there's going to be discussion of putting in an infrastructure, a committee infrastructure to deal with exactly these issues and the fair housing issue, and make sure that there is a much more decided emphasis on those here at CAR. Part of that also, I suspect over time, will equip, work with local. It's one of the objectives of these groups to work with these two committee structures that will be in place here, to work with local associations to have these difficult conversations, to have this type of, within our realtor community, education, and have people who are willing to go out and talk about these issues and open eyes and address what's been a very tough topic for the organization and for many realtors. So I think you'll see a lot of additional information coming out at the CAR level, along with all the things that Tim and others have done throughout the state.
Yes,
that's amazing. I see a lot of recommendations for good books to read, including some that are already on the reading list. So thank you, attendees, for sharing that. I have a question from Bill Brown, actually, a comment and a question. Joel, while the NAACP donation was good, there are other things more practical that will get directly to the root of the problem of education, namely providing internet access and computers to Black areas where kids are having problems learning, especially while at home. And his question is there any way we can collaborate with other organizations to provide this?
Absolutely, and again, the structures that are gonna be discussed this week and put into place are the avenues for reaching out and working with a whole series of diverse groups on issues such as education. And CAR, in addition to the contribution made to the NAACP, has done a lot of other things and will continue to make direct investments in the community. For example, we've made a fairly substantial deposit in the Broadway Federal, which is a local minority-owned bank. We're looking at diversifying a fair amount of our long-term reserves into the community banks so that those can create things. We're doing things at the staff level that directly impact people. But I think Bill's point is exactly right. This is a matter of also educating all communities, particularly those communities where they don't have the resources from home, study and learn from home world. And so I think you will see CAR action to address those things quite directly as well.
Thank you for that. So Farah has put a link in the chat, NAR, it's on the NAR site, and it's Actionable Roadmap for Local Associations, Diversity and Inclusion. So that, along with all the things that Tim and Joel are talking about, along with this organization, we're brand new, the California Association of Black Real Estate Professionals, even deliberately fair housing, we have a task force too. So we are all working on this. So stay tuned. You will see a lot in the future from now until. We just are planting seeds during Black History Month, getting the word out there, and in particular for this association, since we're brand new, just getting our faces out there and letting you know who we are. So I'm not sure, Tani, if I can throw it back to you if you have that question yet.
And if not, I have several others. It wasn't a question.
Okay.
Basically, what I was saying is I just want to let everybody know that after you will be receiving a thank you email from us, and any links that comes from this event, we will put that into that email for everyone who has attended.
Very good. Thank you, Tony. So, Chris, a lot of respected time.
Do I have time for one more?
Yes. Yeah, so, let's let this be the last one, because I do want to get to our panel. We have a very distinguished group of men that we want to talk to, along with the video we want to watch. So let's make this our last question. I will introduce the panel.
Okay.
We'll watch the video, and then we'll open up for some even a deeper dive into this topic.
Very good. So our last question comes from Steve Mineros. And he says, it's been a while. Do you think it's about time for a person of color in CAR, the leadership team? I read it verbatim, and I'm not sure if I can give any more context to that.
Well, I think we have some diversity at CAR, but I'll let Joel do a little bit more of elaborating on that. Not to mention Bill Brown was a president, his brother. So we've had some leaders. There are some in this particular group that I know will become president one day. So I think it's a matter of grooming those that want to take on that role, as well as financial support to take on the role. You know, when you become president of an association, be it local or state, there is a time commitment that you may lose committing to your business. And if you are already having a tough time to get your business launched and off the ground and sustained, being asked to take on travel and what have you as a president can be a challenge for some people, especially for roots of color who may not have the same income levels as their others. So that's just my immediate response to it. Joel, if you want to elaborate a little bit more on that, feel free to do so, please.
There's no question. That we know, and I personally believe, but we also know from science and history that inclusion and diversity builds better organizations. And CAR has had some diversity at the top levels of the organization. The officers have, I think, done an incredible job this year of trying to increase diversity in a very measurable way. And we look at this, we measure this. It's my full expectation that there will be people of color leading this organization. And I look forward to that day.
Great. So do I, Joel. Thank you. And thanks again for just being a part of this and wanting to take an active role in what we're trying to do. As I said earlier, we're going to segue into a panel for some further discussion. I want to take a moment and introduce just an amazing group of young men that I think we'll add some more depth to this conversation today. I'm going to start out with I call it he's the newest to the business and the most educated. He's only been in the business for 6 years. He's with Copen Real Estate Group. He's in Region 16. He has a BA and a PhD. I was not kidding when I said he was smartest. He is with West San Gabriel Valley Association. Give a hand to Leon Townsend. And I'm not sure we can show their faces, but you'll get to see them as we go on. There he is. Say hi to Leon, everybody. Next up, we have BJ Ward. BJ has been in the business for 17 years. He's the co-owner of Comfort Real Estate Services. He's in Region 11. He is married with a 9-year-old daughter. It's a good thing he is a man of integrity and honor, because his wife is the DA for the County of Los Angeles, so he cannot get out of line. He has one of his degrees is in Black Studies from UC Santa Barbara. He is with Ventura County Coastal Association of Realtors. Please welcome BJ. Hey, BJ. Thank you, sir. There he is. Next up is Gary Carter. Gary has been in the business for 19 years. He's with Movoto Real Estate. He's in Region 12. I see him there. He is married with three boys, 8, 7, and 4. He needs referrals, y'all. So help him out. He's got some handsome young guys down there. He has a BA, and he's with the Fresno Association of Realtors. Welcome, Gary. Next up, we have a former NFL player, Mel Wilson. He's been in the business for 43 years. He's with Mel Wilson and Associates. He's in Region 18. He has been married for 47 years. He has a BA in Business Management, and he is in the Southland Region Association of Realtors. Where you at, Mel? I see you there somewhere. There he is. Good. Thank you. And last but certainly not least, he has over 50 years of experience in this industry. He has two locations. He is in Region 22 and in Region 17. He has a BA from Los Angeles University, Cal State Los Angeles. And he's with two associations because he has two locations, Rancho Southeast Association and Southwest Los Angeles Association. Please welcome Mr. Malcolm Bennett. Thank you, Malcolm, for being here. You know, and I wanted to take a moment to just point out to you guys, I purposely wanted to share just a little bit about those young men and their background, because part of the dynamic that we're facing as Black men is a negative image that's out there. 79% of the time that Black men are shown on television, they're either shown as a athlete or a criminal. And that's part of the narrative that we have to change for our community. These are all educated men, committed to their families, committed to change, committed to making life better. So we need these faces to show up on television instead of the ones that are shown now. And part of what makes that change is us to be a voice to the networks. If you recall, the show Cops is no longer shown because we complained about that because it was such a negative image. We are trying to shift that. And part of it is having men like on this panel be the ones that are highlighted. So again, I want to thank you all for joining us and being here today. And one last person that was mentioned earlier today by Bill Brown, we want to take a moment and acknowledge Mike Tier of Tier One Properties. Mike was with the Pacific West Association. He was just a man of who needs to be on television also. He was someone that the community needs to know about. So let's just take a few seconds, and I want to just give us some time to have a moment of silence to recognize Mike and all the work he's done for our association and our community. Okay, thank you. Thank you so much. At this time, we are going to take a moment and watch a video. The video was a speech by Dr. Martin Luther King that was done in 1967, and it was called The Other America. And I want us to take a look at that, and once we do, we're going to take a look at then and now and just recognize where we were and where we are, and with this panel's input, what we can do to move things forward. So I'm going to ask whomever is in charge of the video to take a moment and show that, please. And if we can't show it, I can easily go into the discussion. Just need a cue from someone on what should I do next.
Navalette, you have to unmute yourself.
Prosperity and the honey of opportunity.
Wait, stop.
What I'd like to use as a subject from which to speak this afternoon, the other America. And I use this subject because there are literally two Americas. One America is beautiful for situation. And in a sense, this America is overflowing with the milk of prosperity and the honey of opportunity. This America is a habitat of millions of people who have food and material necessities for their bodies, culture and education for their minds, freedom and human dignity for their spirits. In this America, millions of people experience every day the opportunity of having life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness in all of their dimensions. And in this America, millions of young people grow up in the sunlight of opportunity. But tragically and unfortunately, there is another America. This other America has a daily ugliness about it that constantly transforms the buoyancy of hope into the fatigue of despair. In this America, millions of work-starved men walk the streets daily and search for jobs that do not exist. Economically, the Negro is worse off today than he was 15 and 20 years ago. So the unemployment rate among whites at one time was about the same as the unemployment rate among Negroes. But today, the unemployment rate among Negroes is twice that of whites. And the average income of the Negro is today 50% less than white. As we look at these problems, we see them growing and developing every day.
A new study has found that the wealth gap between white households and minorities has widened in recent years. The wealth of white households was 13 times greater than that of black households in 2013, versus 8 times the wealth in 2010. And the wealth of white households was more than 10 times that of Hispanic households, up from 9 times the wealth in 2010. Pew researchers analyzing data from the Federal Reserve's Survey of Consumer Finances found that the gap between whites and blacks has reached its highest point since 1989. Researchers say a number of factors may be responsible for the widening gap: falling income, lower savings rates, and different asset holdings.
In this America, millions of people find themselves living in rat-infested, vermin-filled slums. In this America, people are poor by the millions. they find themselves perishing on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. In a sense, the greatest tragedy of this other America is what it does to little children. Little children in this other America are forced to grow up with clouds of inferiority forming every day in their little mental skies. And as we look at this other America, we see it as an arena of blasted hopes and shattered dreams. Many in moments of anger, many in moments of deep bitterness, engage in riots. Let me say, as I've always said, and I will always continue to say, that riots are socially destructive and self-defeating. I'm still convinced that nonviolence is the most potent weapon available to oppress people in their struggle for freedom and justice. So I will continue to condemn riots and continue to say to my brothers and sisters that this is not the way. Continue to affirm that there is another way, but at the same time, it is as necessary for me to be as vigorous in condemning the conditions which cause persons to feel that they must engage in riotous activities as it is for me to condemn riots. I think America must see that riots do not develop out of thin air. Certain conditions continue to exist in our society, which must be condemned as vigorously as we condemn riots. In the final analysis, a riot is the language of the unheard. It's failed to hear that the promises of freedom and justice have not been met. It has failed to hear that large segments of white society are more concerned about tranquility and the status quo than about justice, equality, and humanity. And I submit this afternoon that we can end poverty in the United States. Our nation has the resources to do it. The national gross product of America will rise to the astounding figure, some $780 billion this year. We have the resources. The question is whether our nation has the will. So what we are seeking to do in the civil rights movement is to deal with this problem, to deal with this problem of the two Americas. We are seeking to make America one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you for showing that video, Novelette. I'm hoping I am heard. Don't know if I am.
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, great, thank you. Again, that was 1967, I think it was. Here we are in 2021. Let me start by asking some of my panelists. I'm gonna start with Malcolm, being that you are the most experienced of us all. How do you see that then as compared to today?
Well, thank you, and I'm glad to be part of this. I realized when I was born in Selma, Alabama, lived in Montgomery, so I certainly have a deep understanding of the South and the things that have transpired. We've come a long ways, but we have a long ways to go in economics and housing and social existence. I've seen firsthand in the early 70s, working at a construction company, we pulled up into the dock of the Jonathan Club. I'm talking about in early 70s, pulled up in the Jonathan Club with two other white workers. We pulled in, got off the truck, and they stopped us and said, we don't allow Blacks in the Jonathan Club, even to work. And that was in the early 70s, so I've seen it. Those of us that sold properties in Inglewood know back early then, we would knock on the doors of places, they wouldn't even let us in. We took some of our white broker friends with us. So those kind of days have changed, and it's a little more suppressed and subtle. But as you said, the struggle still must go on, and we have a long ways to go. Here we are 50 years after the Fair Housing Act. We're almost at the same rate of a Black home ownership as we're then. So we have a long way to go.
Let me ask you, BJ, someone that has, you know, studied this in school. When you see this video and you hear and you see where we are today, are you optimistic? Are you cautious? Where do you find yourself feeling about where we are now?
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly, you know, naturally, you know, the optimist. So, and looking at the video, it's certainly alarming to see, and it's saddening in the same vein to see that statistically we haven't come very far. And although we may think that given time, the perception is that we have, but statistically and the fact of the matter is that we haven't. But I'm certainly optimistic. I'm optimistic about, and I think to your point in your opening remarks, you talked about the idea of making sure that this is a discussion not just for 2020 or 2021, but that it's ongoing. And I think to Joel's point, it's twofold. It has to deal with policy, and it has to deal with kind of us being, boots on the ground realtors. So we have policy that's in place and that's clearly in motion, but we can't neglect the fact that we need to also be doing our part as realtors. You know, I think that I would love for us, given that this has garnered attention and we're at the point that we are now, to maybe take an initiative, maybe the Talk to 10 initiative, where we as Black realtors are out talking to at least 10 Black individuals or families a day or a week. And I know for some of you that may not be much of a challenge, but for me and my market, our population in Ventura County, the African American population is just over 2%. So, I've been a realtor over time who's just kind of put my head down and just been focused on conducting business and selling and growing my office. And this issue has come to the forefront, not just for everyone across the country, white, Black across the country, but even for me, it's made me, you know, and I've studied Black studies in college, but it's caused pause for me. I don't think that I am, or I have done enough. So yeah, to answer your question, I'm certainly optimistic. We have a long way to go, and I think that the time is now.
Great. Mel, I want you to unmute yourself because I want to ask you, you play the NFL and we all see Black athletes in playing sports for a number of years, but even in that arena, we were, and you could elaborate more, received when we were on the field, but then once the game was over, there was a different world. Can you share with us, even with your experience in the NFL and where we are today?
Sure. Well, thanks for having me, and good to see my brothers across the virtual globe here. I can give you a really clear example of something that happened to me. I was a scholar athlete at my local university, Cal State Northridge. I was an All-American football player, the first in the history of the university. Played professional football for a year and a half, got injured. Had a business degree when I got out of school. And I went back to work in a small office that was a regional office. Matter of fact, one of our past presidents of NAR and our state and our local association was the owner of that brokerage. I got great training, but here's what happened. I door knocked for 7 days a week, 9 days, 7 days a week for 9 months. And I got zero transactions out of that time, not because I didn't have good training, not because I didn't have good education, but because of the people who I was door knocking around. They were not looking like me. They would not allow me to have an opportunity to represent them. What was so heartbreaking was that they cheered for me on the athletic fields. They came to the games. They commended me when I was written up in the newspapers, but they wouldn't do business with me. And so I ended up leaving that firm, going to another firm. And I decided, because my wife gave me a jarring question. She says, honey, when are you gonna get a real job? You know, that almost broke my heart because I've been working 9 months, 7 days in a row. So I went to work for another brokerage and I focused on working in the community of which I grew up in, which is Pacoima. It was primarily made up of Latinos and Blacks. And that's where I got my start. And eventually I had a number of my colleagues, college classmates who were finally getting into the job situation. And then ultimately I started selling homes to them as well. And they were not just people of color, but they're people of all different races and backgrounds and nationalities. So I've seen it, and it's sad, but still today, there are some people who judge you not by your ability to do good work for them, but they judge you by the color of your skin.
Which is very unfortunate. Let me turn to Leon, who has not been in the business very long, and just ask him, what has his experience been like? Do you find you have to work with just Black people, or are you received well? What's your experience as a relatively new realtor compared to us? Unfortunately, we can't hear you, Leon. It doesn't look like you've muted, so I think you may have a technical issue.
There you go. Now?
There you go.
I'm going to be flat out honest. I have not worked with a black client since I've been in the business. My first transaction coming up right now is my first Black client in almost 6 years. So for me, I've had Black prospects. I've literally had written up offers for Black families, and they've gotten frustrated because our offers have gotten denied, and they've gone on to other realtors that don't look like me. I've lived in the city of Pasadena since I was 5. As BJ knows, I went to a university that was 2% Black. BJ and I have a unique connection, but it's hard. I've door knocked, like Mel said. I've been kicked out of homes because I was Black. You know, I've worked in brokerages where I was the only Black person, and I was the only person that can answer questions about having Black clients. And, you know, I think that it's a unique thing. I feel like if in a lot of your cities and a lot of areas that you're in, you don't have Black brokerage owners, you don't have Black managers, you don't have Black supervisors. You may have a sprinkled in a couple Black realtors, but there's not many of us. And, you know, we have this internal thing where even Black clients don't trust Black realtors because of things that happened in the past. I became a realtor because I had never seen a Black realtor before.
Pretty amazing. And that's why I made sure I pointed out when I introduced you all, there, the whole idea with the Jim Crow laws was to make Black men look inferior and look and untrusting. And so, again, the narrative on television as you see on a regular basis. So it's up to us to make sure we paint a better image, and people like us are shown on television and given the microphone to say how much we care about our families and our communities. Let me turn to Gary, because I know in Fresno, I'm not sure what the population of African Americans are there. So maybe you can tell us what your experience is, how you are addressing the issue. And then I'm going to follow up with you to ask you about having 3 boys and having to raise them in a community. So first question is just how your market with you being an African-American realtor.
First of all, thank you, Tim, CER, and the California Socialist Black Professionals. You gentlemen look great, and everyone else on the panel, thank you for this opportunity. I miss you guys. You know, Fresno, and you know, it's very like, what, 10% maybe are the Black community, maybe less than that. For, it's kind of funny, I think Leon touched about it, you know, when you have Black buyers or sellers, they, in my area, they want to work, majority of them, they kind of seek out for you, right? And then another thing is, if you go to maybe the west part of town, you have other realtors who don't want to go there, who've been in the industry for maybe 30, 40 plus years, and they're not comfortable or they're not educated on how to handle or deal a transaction with a Black customer. My, you know, I do maybe 10% and the rest are different ethnicities, Asian, Indian, Caucasian, Hispanic, especially Hispanic. You brought that up when you said the different, I did a kind of an experiment. I'm a professor at the community college. I've been teaching there since 2005. I teach real estate principles and I teach real estate practice. And also teach, Tim brought it up earlier, I go to, on Black History Month, I go to the junior high schools, right? The seventh and eighth graders who, when you ask a question, what does a realtor look like? And guess what? They know. They say everything else but a Black American individual. And then I go and I talk about different occupations. I say, I got different ethnicities on the board. If I tell you a doctor, what ethnicity is that? If I tell you a doctor, a dentist, a police officer, a firearm, and then I say, how about a drug dealer? How about an athlete, as Mel said? How about an entertainer, right? That's where we come up. And then I ask this one last question. How many of these individuals do you think experience home ownership? Very few of them say Black. All of them say the white ethnicity or the Asian or the Indian. It just goes to show that this is a need discussion. This is a desire, thirst for it, and we need it. Tim, I'm gonna go into what you were talking about, my three boys. You know, you guys probably see me on Facebook. You guys know I have a diverse family, right? My wife is Asian and my kids are Black and Asian. So what does that mean? That means this. When we first saw George Floyd, I sent the video and I showed him, and my son said, I'm being teary-eyed, saw it, but my son said, Daddy, is that gonna happen to me? You know, I don't think white America kids say that, right? I don't think they do. And I had a conversation with my boys and tell them that when you get pulled over by a police officer, here are the 1, 2, 3, 4 things you need to do, right? And I think we have that conversation with our children as other ethnicities don't have. I'm just gonna leave it there and give some time to the panel. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think that's, I'm gonna segue into when I was growing up, and I'm not gonna make it about me, but I recall one of my friends would say to me, the man in blue is a friend to you, which was referred to police officers. it was a white friend I had. But that's not the case for us in our Black community. You know, we have different conversation, like you just said, with our children, our especially our boys. Let me go to you, Leon, and ask you the question. Did your parents have the conversation with you? Did you, how have you handled that growing up?
I would say my situation is a little bit different. Clearly I'm the youngest on this panel, but like I said, my experience is different. I went to college at 16. So my dad had a discussion with me at 16 about what to expect in college. I had a conversation at 18 about you are officially legal now. This is what's gonna happen. I had a conversation at 21 about, okay, now you can drink. And then when I hit 25, it started getting to the conversations about, you know, making 25, making 30. You know, these are, you know, you've hit those crucial ages that a lot of your friends have not hit. on my 25th and 30th, on my 25th and my 30th birthday, that same week, I lost two childhood friends. Just one was shot by a cop, and the other was killed in a hit and run accident. And, you know, my mom's from Mississippi. My dad's from Illinois. They both moved to LA when they were young. So we have breaks of this conversation every time in life. And then when George Floyd thing happened, my dad told me that I was never meant to be a protester, because he knew that I had an opportunity to change from behind the scenes, you know, law, things that, you know, finance, real estate, because that's where my background is. So my dad always, at every point in life, made sure he knew that I knew what I was capable of. But he also didn't want me to forget what this world would do to me. And, you know, I still teach that to the students that I mentor and to my community, that even though, you know, I have a PhD, I don't brag about it, but I do have one. I am a doctor and I am a professor. I'm still a Black man. I'm still a Black man that is 32 years old, that at any point in time, I could be arrested for something I didn't do, or I could have something happen to me that nobody else I know could have happened to me. So, you know, I never forget, because I can't.
Right. And so knowing stuff like that and knowing what we know after watching the video, what can we do as Black men to move the needle forward to help increase home ownership, help to make it one America instead of the two Americas? I'm gonna just see who wants to talk on that without picking anyone individually. Anybody wants to share their thoughts on that?
Well, I'll make a few comments. Growing up in the South, my parents moved here looking for a better life for me and my brother from the segregated South. And I just felt that I owed it to my parents to make something of myself. And always, it's not that I'm anti-white, but I was just always been pro-Black. And my mother was always concerned about me being a protester and going to riots and civil unrest and things, because I had that commitment that I saw that other America that Dr. King talked about. And early on, I sold Jet magazines on Central Avenue. So I grew up in the community. I understand the community and what we go through. And just like Gary said, my father taught us what to do. When the police pull you over, first thing you do, you put your hands up high, you don't move, and you call them sir, and you speak to them like that. That is the difference between how we grew up in the community. And growing up, I'll just end with this. Growing up, I always knew that I wanted to accomplish something. And I used to drive up in Truesdale when I first got a car and look at all those fabulous houses. And when I used to first drive up there on every Friday night, they would pull me over. And then after a while, so many officers pulled me off, they all knew me. And so they just stopped pulling me over. But I saw that dream and I saw that vision. And as I started early in my career, my commitment was the fact that I didn't want to be the best Black realtor. I wanted to be the best realtor, and I just happened to be Black.
That's a good point. Anybody else want to share their thoughts on what we could do to move the needle forward to improve things? Go ahead, Mel.
Yeah, I would like to share, Tim. You know, I'm a guy who really follows the data. And, you know, as I listened to Dr. King in 1967 talk about the other America, talked about, you know, the gaps in homeownership. And now, you know, so I'm going to share a couple of things, data points that I think really we all need to focus on, we as men of color, Black men specifically. Unemployment. The labor statistics have shown consistently that whatever unemployment is in terms of the rate, that Blacks' home ownership rate is 3 to 4% higher, no matter what. Income, income for Blacks is about, it depends on whether you're a woman or a man. If you're a woman, it's only 62% to a white man. A Black man may be 75%. When you look at wealth, white folks have 10 times more wealth than Black folks do. And if you look at home ownership, you know, Dr. King talked about in 1967, but I'll take you back to 1900, which is essentially what, 35 years or so after slavery and the emancipation. Home ownership for Blacks was 30% less than it is for whites. And look at it today. In California, home ownership for Blacks, it's still 30% less than whites. So, you know, people say we've come a long way. Yeah, we have. So what can we do? I think we need to focus on the numbers. And I think we as Black men need to help Black women. There are the Black women, the Black realtor women are worse off than we are. I look at a panel of Black men, but I don't see a panel of Black women. And they have it worse off than all of us. So I think that we have an obligation to help Black women, and we certainly should focus on the numbers and see what we can do to improve all those metrics: unemployment, income, wealth, home ownership.
I think Mel froze on us.
No, I just
said up. Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Can I talk to that point, Tim? Is that okay?
Please. Yes, please.
I think, Mel, you hit it on the head. I think that, you know, a lot of times in a lot of households, a lot of African-American households and people of color households, and even with us, obviously, we're realtors, so we're having the discussion about bridging the gap between home ownership between white and African-Americans. But, you know, we also have to realize, how do you get to a point where you can attain a home? You know, there's been a lot of conversations about systematic and systemic racism over the last year. And you know, people aren't necessarily having a conversation about home ownership if they're having trouble paying rent and putting food on the table. So I think it starts, we have to go way back into the idea of education and having better public schools in people of color neighborhoods. It starts there. Once we have better schools, once kids are afforded an opportunity to get a higher education, and they get a degree and they get a job, then they can move forward into wealth building, into home ownership. But we have to start there. And aside from that, I mean, race aside, we have an inventory issue. So nobody's, you know, that's a whole nother issue outside of whatever color you are. We need more housing. And there's obviously legislation we're working on for that. But I think it has to start with education. We need to put more money into the schools, and we have to start there. Thank you.
Sure. Let me take a moment and see if there's some questions from the chat room that we want to address, just in respect of time, to see if there's any questions. If not, I'm going to turn back to you all with some other questions. Novelette or Crystal, are you monitoring? Is there anything from the audience we need to address before we continue?
Yes, I am. And I will, this is Crystal.
Okay.
And I will try to quickly do it. There's a lot of comments, and okay, I'm going to skim through them to get to the questions. Many of them were the link to the MLK video, which we have put in the chat. Okay. So go to the chat for that link. A lot of accolades on having this discussion. I wanted to pick up on Mel's comment, Black men panel. Please stay tuned. There will be a Black women panel for that perspective. So it is not one at the expense of the other. This was geared around Tim's talk about the other America, and those of you who were here at the top of the hour or at the first part saw the discussion between Joel and Tim, and this panel was an extension of that, but by no means an exclusion of a conversation with Black women. So it's coming, stay tuned.
Yes.
All right, let me, I'm at the Q&A first. Okay, now let me go over to the chat where most of the, but if you have, while I'm getting this together, if you have a question you'd like, one more you'd like to ask, and then I'll come right behind you with questions.
Yeah, okay. So I do want to, and this is again open to the panel. Governor Gavin Newsom has put together a task force to explore reparations for Black people, because of all the people in the history of this country, most have been given some type of a reparation for what they have gone through, except Black people. So my question to the panel is, A, do you feel it's necessary? And B, how to explain that to your white colleagues? Because the first thing they will say is, well, it wasn't me, so why do I have to pay for that? How do you address something like that going forward? And that's open to whomever wants to take on the question.
Well, you know, I'll say real quickly, you have to go back to, you know, I mean, 100, 200, 300, 400 years where you have to go where, you know, policies were engraved, right? Policies, BJ talked about the school systems were engraved, right? They talk about, you know, just, you know, you see something colored, you see something white. Those have been engraved psychologically in people's mind. Videos of what we've seen white Americans treat other Black Americans. So what I'm saying is this, and you know, it has to start with, you know, financial systems, you know, equal financial systems to get out there for, to make an equal playing field for everyone. I mean, really have to. I think that, you know, go ahead. Go ahead with someone else comment and then I'll come back.
You want to say something, Leon?
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, don't get me wrong, from a finance perspective, reparations is a great thing, but we have an internal problem. Our problem is we don't know how to manage something when we get it. You know, from taking from a perspective of finance, you know, when we get free money or when there's an opportunity, those who are a public school graduate, I'm a public school graduate, we don't necessarily know exactly the right way to invest our money so that we can do all these things. So, you know, like Gary said, it starts with education, but we also feel like there's not enough knowledge to tell us the right path. I mean, not us realtors, but I mean, you know, potential clients, potential prospects, generations down the line, they're not prepared to handle, you know, the hurt and pain from 300, 400 years of slavery and systemic racism and policies, because we're so focused on today. We're not focused on creating generational wealth. We're trying to buy jewelry and Cadillac like comedians would joke about. We're not trying to buy homes and create, you know, a place where, you know, our next generation can live tax and debt free. We're not, nobody's trying to do that other than us that are in this seat or others that we don't know about already.
So would you say something, that's something, I'm sorry, go ahead, who was? Okay, I'm just commenting on your comment, Leon. So is that something we should do as a Black community? Look at how we can better educate our community as a whole, along with what other rules and regulations have to be put in place? Is that what I'm hearing from you, Leon?
Oh, there definitely has to be a combination of both. I know for me, I always knew since I was a kid, I wanted to be a homeowner. But I never knew exactly how much it took. My parents bought one home in 95 and they're going to stay in until they die. My dad has told me this numerous times. He will stay in his house until he dies. He's not going anywhere else. But the problem is, if that's the case, that's cool. You know, my parents' house will be paid off and can be a hub for that, my family. But what about my niece and nephew? Right? Don't we want to create generational wealth for them that they can pass on to their generations after us? But if we're so focused on right now, we can't do that. And that's our problem. It's like, you know, it starts with literacy. It starts with painting that picture of who we are and what we can do in this world. And, you know, I'm pretty sure, you know, my grandparents experienced this. So I'm pretty sure Malcolm and Mel could probably touch on this, but we've always been told when we were kids what we can do. Not letting people do exactly what they want. You want to be a firefighter, go be a firefighter. You want to go be a doctor, go be a doctor. It doesn't matter how much education it takes. It doesn't matter how much time. You got a dream, go do it. Don't let nothing stop you. Your color, your skin, the content of your character can't stop you from changing your world in the world after you.
So let me touch on that just a little bit more, because if you all were at the forum when Bill Brown gave his example of Tia brought to the table two loans, one from a Black family, one from a white family, with the same identical scores and income, what have you, but yet they were treated differently. So while I think we do have some internal, I think we also need to make sure we don't lose sight of externally what those systems that are in place that are preventing us as people to go forward. Mel, I think Malcolm, I thought I told you wanted to say something. Mel, I saw one of your hands go up. I'm not sure which one.
A few comments. I think, you know, we have to be really realistic about where we are. We're kind of like in a relay race starting late to catch the baton. So we're going to have to make some serious thoughts about this. In terms of Black homeownership, as you know, with the prices like they are now, it's very hard for white folks to qualify for loans with down payment at these prices and stuff. So we have a problem. And I think back to my career starting off with very little money. I got together with some friends of mine and we bought a small place together and then we pyramided on. I think Blacks gonna have to come to realization. They have to look to family members and close friends and align and make whatever property they can purchase to get on that ladder and doing that. Reparations sounds great, but we need to deal with the here and now. And even with down payment assistance and all those things, it's not gonna help that many people, but we need to work on as many tools in the shed as we can. But we need to realize there's a supply problem. Whenever there's a supply, prices are gonna continue to rise. And we can't build our way out of this fast enough for prices to come down for the average Black American to buy a house. We just have to be realistic about that and look at what our options are with other races come together and do things. So that's part of our education to pieces. And the fact that you hit it on it, we don't have that intergenerational wealth. And we're gonna have even a more problem now with Prop 19. That's just gonna widen that gap, because when those properties are reappraised that they can't take the parent to child, they're not gonna be able to pay the taxes and they're gonna sell those properties. There goes the intergenerational wealth right out the door. So we need to have some real come to Jesus conversations about where we are with Black folks and how we're going to close this gap.
Mel, you want to say something?
Yeah, I'd like to get back to your original question, which has to do with reparation. I am not apologizing for the governor looking into reparation. I mean, we've seen it happen with many other cultures, many other nationalities, so I don't walk away from that. But I think that we can chew gum and walk at the same time. Housing production is down. Housing supply level is at historic lows. And so part of what we can do as an organization, the California Association of Realtors and the National Association, is we can keep pushing hard to take away some of these things that remove incentives for builders to build. You know, rent control, people think that's great, but it doesn't solve the problem. We need an increase in the housing supply. There are so many things that the local jurisdictions have done to increase the cost of housing production. And so it benefits not only Black folks, it benefits everybody. So we need to push harder on that. Financial literacy, I don't think it should just be on the backs of the Black folks. I think CAR and NAR need to step it up, put money where they say their mouth is, and help folks learn the basics of economics, paying their bills on time, having good credit behavior, and having financial literacy as an integral part of what CAR is pushing for if you truly want to increase Black homeownership. And Black homeownership, there's not enough Black realtors to support all the Black folks in the state of California. So white folks, Latinos, Asians, and everybody else, you're gonna get a rising tide piece of that pie too. So don't try to make us feel bad because we want to increase Black homeownership, because you're gonna be right at the table, because at the end of the day, it's all about green, the green money in your bank account. And so, you know, I just think we can do more than one thing. I don't think we can just sit around and say, no, we don't want to talk about reparation. Why not? Talk about it. Let's see where it goes.
Thank you, Mel. Chris, I'm going to come back to you, and then I'm going to go to BJ,
okay,
and we'll see what the audience is asking of us.
Okay. I have a couple. Okay. One from Ken Bryant. And this is for anyone who'd like to jump in on this. What are your thoughts on specific initiatives and measurables that we can develop? And that's to solve any of the problems that were just mentioned, from education to reparations.
Say
specific
the
initiatives
again.
And measurables.
You know,
I'm sorry?
Earlier, I said metrics, things that we can measure. You can measure unemployment. You can measure income. You can measure wealth. You can measure home ownership. This is not, you know, something that requires what my brother Townsend has, which is a PhD. All you have to have is some basic arithmetic to know how to measure things like that.
Okay, I have one for from Catherine Burdett. A statement and then a question. We had affirmative action in the 1970s. We don't now. The wealth gap from lack of housing opportunities, as shown in the Newsday articles, appraisal disparities, unfair lending practices, and high student loan debt, makes it an unfair playing field. What can be done to help solve these issues? For anyone who wants to join in.
So to me, I think that's where we as leaders have to come to the table. I saw one of the chat mention inviting affiliates, meaning the banks and the people that are controlling money. We have to be more in a leadership role to be at the table, to be part of policy making instead of policy following. And until we can do that, we are going to be told what can happen and what can't happen. There's the old saying, if you don't have a seat at the table, you're part of the menu. But we have to be at the table. In order for us to be, to change those policies with lending and loans for students and what have you. If you look at the federal government, the amount of money they give to universities is outstanding, yet they charge students an X amount of dollars to go to school. Well, that needs to be a shift. And in order for that to be a shift, someone has to be in a table that advocates for the students, as opposed to someone that is advocating to try and make more money. I think that's, again, it all comes back to leadership and being part of it. I want to make sure I get BJ's comment because he wanted to say something. BJ, I want to give you an opportunity to say something, please.
Yeah, and it was just a follow-up as far as the reparations are concerned. I think, you know, a couple years ago, if you would have asked me about reparations, I would have said kind of, you know, philosophically and from a practical standpoint, I didn't necessarily agree with them. I mean, we're coming at, you know, our history is basically a 400-year unpaid internship in slavery. Then we go into, you know, the Jim Crow era and that sort of thing. And I know, like, to what somebody else's point, other groups have had reparations. And I read a quote the other day that said, reparations are not punitive, they're restorative. So what, you know, I don't think it's going to be a situation where folks are getting checks. What I would like to see is that money infused into, again, I think for me, I'm a stickler on the education component, but I would like to see those funds going back into education, going back into some sort of, you know, down payment assistance, housing subsidies, all of the systematic racism components of our history. I would like to see those restored, if you will. So again, for me, reparations is not punitive, it's restorative, and it's an opportunity to get us back on a level playing field.
Good point, good point. And in order to close the gap, you cannot give $10 to the white person and $10 to the black person. That doesn't close the gap, that just moves the needle. So in order for things to change and for the gap to close, we have to do something that's favorable to help make things better than what we are trying to close the gap from. Go ahead, Crystal. I want to make sure we hear from the audience.
Yeah, so Tim, That was actually a great segue to this question from Ronald Johnson. How do we address the home value gap between historically Black/minority neighbors and non-minority neighbors? And could be neighborhoods also. So this gets to the appraisal question and what we saw, the difference between depersonalizing and de-blacking your home.
Right.
So if someone wants to take that one, anyone?
I can pull it if you want.
There you go. Go ahead, Neon.
You know, I think Black home sellers have a difficult job when it comes to selling. And if you are in the LA area, if you've noticed what's been happening over the last 10 years, you are at a complete disadvantage. You know, there's some great, you know, escalations and elevations in the LA area when it comes to SoFi Stadium and, you know, all of these different things. But, you know, one of the things that is predominantly evident is eminent domain. Eminent domain is something that a lot of people don't really address. But if you are in the LA area, if you're close to Inglewood, if you are, you know, on Crenshaw, or if you're in any major street close to the vicinity of SoFi Stadium, you have experienced eminent domain. And eminent domain was around in the 60s and 70s, right? I've studied it. You have government things that they can do that doesn't help not only Black home sellers, but minority home sellers. You know, not only just the fact of that, then you have to, you know, for an African-American home owner, you know, the first thing they do is they make their house look like it's their house. Like, you know, you got pictures up, you have culture. When you come to other ethnicities, you know, there are family photos and things like that, but you can distinguish between an African-American homeowner and, say, a Asian homeowner. There are distinguishing characteristics that they can see. So it's a tough question, but, you know, that's a question that's going to take years to actually answer, because there's a lot of inbred biases at other levels that can't be controlled by the homeowner and by the seller. You know, lenders, right? Lenders have issues with it. You have appraisers that have guidelines that, you know, we don't really get access to unless you become an appraiser. So I just think that, you know, until, like you said, we get a seat at the table, we're able to be there and we're able to see these laws and rewrite them, that question can never be answered truly from the outside looking in.
So guys, it is 6 o'clock. We are scheduled to end at 6. I will stick around if anybody else wants to, but I want to respect those that have to depart for another meeting or for dinner, whatever. But we are here. There seems to be some more questions that are in the chat. We will answer them and stick around. So,
Tim, I just have one quick comment I just want to make here. This is a quote from our NAR president, Vince Molta. And this is quotes. If action is not taken now, we will fear that the history will repeat itself and the racial wealth gap will widen and threaten the overall prosperity of our nation. And that's a really kind of conclude everything what we're seeing tonight. Once again, I want to thank our panels here. Tim, I want to, you know, Malcolm, Mel, BJ, Leon, you guys are the best, your wisdom. And I hope this, our other directors and other colleagues out there take something away from this so they can get it, you know, in a different light. And I like some of the comments. We should get, Tim, you mentioned it, other affiliates, other minority groups also.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to make sure we have a resource guide to share, but I want to get back to Crystal. She has some questions because apparently folks are going to stick around for a little
bit. Yeah, well, there are several and I'll go through them, but I just want to give a couple of closing comments. We have gotten a lot of questions about this webinar. How's it going to be shared? How do you get access to it? We will have it on our, make sure if you haven't already liked our Facebook page for, we're calling it KBREP, but it is the California Association of Black Real Estate Professionals. Please like the page. We will post this on our page. That would be the easiest and most efficient way to get this recording. I believe it will also be on YouTube. The technical side of it, I'm going to leave that to Tani and see how many places it's going to be posted, but it will be on our page for access. Questions about collaborating with, and this is a question from Howard Katchen, about collaborating with other organizations, specifically the National Association of Real Estate Brokers, which is the national arm of the Realtists. And for those of you who don't know about the Realtists, I could tell you, but I would like to have maybe Malcolm or someone on the panel let you know who the Realtists are and what their charge is. But the question is about this group or CAR in general, collaborating with this group, with NAREB. Has there been any collaboration? Is there any plan for any?
Well, just real quick, we're new, so we probably plan to, but to go into more history of them, I will either ask Mel or Malcolm to share. I see they both had their hands up, so feel free to chime in, gentlemen.
Go ahead, Malcolm.
Okay, I was going to defer to my senior, but I'll go right ahead. We did have some discussions, but and I do belong to the Realtors as well. Full disclosure, but this is a group of Realtors that we're working through with CAR, our partner NAR. So that's kind of, we have not looked at partnered out with other groups at this point, not to say that's not and disparaging thing. But the one thing I would just add real quick to, I think what Gary and someone said regarding properties in South LA, where 90% of our business is done and probably 80% of our clients are not Black. But I can remember, and there's a lot of talk now about Leimert Park, and years back, we sold some houses, a couple of Whispers owned some houses in there. And almost 25 years ago, I never forget, I walked in a open house in Leimert Park, and I walked in and it was a Black lady there. So I thought she was the owner of the house. And when I introduced myself, then she gave me a card. She said, "Oh, I'm a realtor with Fred Sands." And I said, first of all, I said, when did Fred Sands start hiring Black folks? And when did Fred Sands start selling houses in Leimert Park? And so it's the old thing, you know, rising tides raises all ships. So values got so high on the west side, they start moving now to Leimert Park, Baldwin Hills. And that's going to trigger on down. We've seen prices rise in South LA more than we ever believed. So one thing I just add to just say as a joint comment to us as Black realtors, it's always, I believe, white folks tend to accept us more when we're accepted by our own peers. So we must make sure that we reach out and become successful and serve our community as we reach out into that. And like the comment was said, with our management company, there's not enough Black folks owning property where we manage for us to survive if we only work for Black folks. But so you got to broaden your horizon and look at ways of reaching out. And like I say, it's great. We got my brothers here with PhDs and stuff. But like Mel said, you got to learn this education on the street, where it is and what's happening, and understand that if you're going to succeed in this market.
Thank you, Malcolm. Crystal, any other questions?
I just wanted to quickly add that we do have Realtists who are part of KBREP. So it is, again, I'm a and person, not an either or. And with that, we are setting this up to be inclusive. So if the question was about a partnership, that word may not have happened yet. And that's only because we were just formally introduced this morning. Right. We are brand new. In a lot of areas, we're still putting structure around it, but you're going to hear a lot more from us. And definitely collaborations. Our first event was with Deliberately Fair Housing. That's a collaboration. We share, we have a lot of synergy. We share members, and the same with the Realtist. We have Realtist members. So this isn't, the things we are doing are not in a vacuum and in a tunnel, and we are, we have enough issues that we need all hands on deck. So we are working with any and all organizations towards the betterment of Black America, Black realtors, and everything that we've mentioned here. As I scroll, we have a lot of comments. There is a just a great community going on in this chat, and great information. So if you guys can save it, that would be great, but we're holding on to all of this. The other comment I wanted to make, lost my thought, lots of stuff going on. Also, Dorinda, I'll say one thing and then I'll give it back to him, I'm sorry. Dorinda shared a great resource. If anybody wants to know where we are, as Mel said, he's a quantitative statistics guy, data, the SHIBA report, and you can get it at NAREB.org, NAREB.org. It is the state of housing in Black America. It has statistics and all the information you need. Also, I did want to say that there are a lot of local associations, including my own, Greater LA Realtors, who have programs going on. We had an Advancing Racial Equality series going on. So there is a lot of connective tissue from the local level to the state and even to the national to address the concerns, the inequity. So kudos to you guys, to CAR for giving us space to do this. And like I said, we just started. This is our Black History Month celebration. You are going to see and hear a lot from us. And I am taking note and making sure we get everyone's comments and great information consolidated. So thank you for allowing me that liberty, Tim.
Okay, you're more than welcome. And, go ahead.
No, I'm just gonna toss it back to you because I think what I'm seeing are a lot of comments and most of the questions were along the same line. So I think we've captured all of them.
Okay, very good. So I am going to, it is 11 minutes after six. I want to respect everyone's time, but I want to take a moment and start by thanking CAR for just acknowledging us as a group and forming. This was a vision by Bill Brown and Malcolm and Evelyn for years, and to see it come to fruition today and having a panel in Black History Month, hats off to them and to Joel and to the staff for just saying and recognizing leadership, Otto and Jennifer and all those, to recognize that this is a need and they are embracing it and welcoming us and letting this take place today. So we wanna thank them. I wanna thank this very distinguished panel, Malcolm, BJ, Mel, Leon, Gary, you guys were amazing. You guys are the image that we want America to see. Educated, love your families, trying to make change. And I think that's what we did tonight. We started out, our high was 145 people. I think that's not bad for a first time out to shoot for a group of guys that want to get the word out. I think we put something out there. We've started dialogue. And so just follow us going forward. There's more to come. There's more events. There's going to be a panel of women. I know that also, Crystal, and I'm looking forward to that. But yes. I just want to thank you all for being here this evening and being a part of this, and making sure that we are being heard. And the challenge is to keep talking. It doesn't stop tonight. We gotta keep doing things. We gotta keep getting seats at the table, be it elected offices or volunteer, wherever we need to go. We need to make sure we're part of the conversation and have a seat at the table. So with that said, I'm gonna close. Wish you all a safe evening. I know you got a long commute, right? And you'll be safe and can go to dinner. And we look forward to getting the information out and important more resources to keep you guys going. So thank you, guys.
Good job, Tim. Good job, Tim.
Great job, Tim.
Thank you.
Great job.
Great job.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Joel.
Thank you, Joel.
Thanks, Joel.
Novalette, thank you so much.
Novalette, thank you.
Great job, gentlemen. Thank you all so much for being here. We appreciate you.
Great. Bye. Have a good night.
Good night. Thank you.